welcome to episode 247 of the Lost Levels podcast. Today's episode is on the very special game Super Paper Mario, which you can right now buy on the Wii U eShop, which is what we've been doing as of lately, you know, covering games that Wii games that were on the Wii U eShop. And with me discussing this very, very amazing game, at least in my opinion, is Spider Staryu.
Oh, I'm back. Hello, everyone. Actually, you're back, too. We weren't here last week.
Yeah, I'm back. I wasn't really around because work. Anyway, so, you know, everyone, if you don't know what Super Paper Mario is, it was the Wii addition to the series Paper Mario, and it took a very drastic approach to the Paper Mario series compared to, you know, the first two iterations. It was originally on the GameCube, fun fact, and it would later go into development exclusively for the Wii. And, well, when we first, as I mentioned, Super Paper Mario, I'm gonna slur that word so many times, I'm gonna say it so wrong, but Super Paper Mario was very different from those original Paper Mario games. And when you first, you know, got accustomed to the game, maybe when you first played it, what were your initial thoughts on it? Did you think that the change was a good thing, a bad thing? Were you dreading finishing the game, etc.? You go first, because I feel like it would be awkward for me to answer immediately after.
That's fine. My first initial thoughts about the game compared to, I'll be honest, right off the bat, it wasn't exactly positive at first. I'm like, no, what are they doing? Why is it going to be different? What is this? But, you know, it was still, honestly, that after having those thoughts and then actually playing the game, you get used to it. You get used to the whole, you know, no longer it being a RPG or turn-based. Because this isn't an RPG. This is like, a platformer, right? That's what we call it now, an action platformer, like something like that. So it's very much different than the RPG style of play and things like that. So it's a little bit, like, different to get used to and stuff. But, you know, I still enjoyed it. You know, it still was good. It was fun times. And, of course, the characters and the story still just... We're gonna get all into that later on. But, yeah, there's still some good points to it.
I was okay with it. I don't think I was, you know... Like, I don't think I was actually as indifferent to it as many other people were, especially because if you guys listen to our Wii retrospective podcast, when the Wii was coming out, I was sort of just getting into Nintendo, like, really, like, following Nintendo.
Right.
Because I'd still play the games. I remember I played Pokemon and stuff, but, you know, I wasn't on the internet that much. So I think right around the Wii was coming out, like, that was a thing. So I don't remember too much about... Like, I definitely did not know it was a GameCube title, and I don't remember there being, like, I don't think I realized that it was a big change to Super Paper Mario, from Super Paper Mario to the original, like, Thousand Year Door and stuff. I didn't realize it that much because, I was really young when my siblings played both those games, both the original RPG games. So I don't think I realized it was a change, because, you know, it still looks similar, at least,
yeah.
You know, Mario still looks like, or Paper Mario still looks like Paper Mario, so I didn't have any thoughts about it, but, like, looking back, I mean, all I can say is, like, wow, that was a shock. Like, I wouldn't have expected someone to change it to that degree.
Yeah, and I remember, like Nintendo Power and things like that. Like, did you read Nintendo Power when you were younger? Like, or you don't remember those?
I had Nintendo Powers. I had it when it ended, but, not for very long. I think I had Nintendo Power for maybe a year.
Oh. Well, like, what I mean is, like, I think in, like, Nintendo Power, like, they had, like, screenshots and stuff, and I think it's, like, you mentioned, it's, like, and when you see it, you're like, oh, cool, like, a new Paper Mario game, oh, this is gonna be so awesome, you know, oh, I love it, oh, great. And then when you see, like, when you actually, like, watch it and, like, see, like, how it's so different, it's like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's, like, the difference and stuff, so.
Well, right away, they, like, right away when you play the game, you'll get the difference from the original. Like, even the music, I feel like, is in a different style. It's much more digital.
Yeah.
And... which was a good thing. I think it worked, like, in the long run, because it... Despite... I feel hypocritical to say, like, oh, well, it's not, like, a true Paper Mario game, because that's what I say about Sticker Star, and I don't like it because of that. And while this game isn't really like the original Paper Mario games either, it, you know, it does well enough to establish it as its own thing, because, you know, the title screen is completely different, like, different music, you see it, and you realize this is not your grandpa's Paper Mario game.
Oh.
This is a new, hip, modern one. Radical, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, like, the characters and stuff still feel Paper Mario.
Well, later on, as you get into it, it still, you know, it has that whole idea of actually having other characters besides Mario, which is something that I'm glad that they did. Unfortunately, the later games, especially Sticker Star, wouldn't do that.
Oh, unfortunately, yeah. Sticker Star was like, story? We don't need a story. We don't need good characters. We just need Toads. Oh, and then we had the Curse of Toads and Paper Toads, and oh my god. Oh, that's a whole nother podcast, but yeah. Back to Super Paper Mario, yeah.
Okay, so we talked about how there were a bunch of changes, and what do you think were, at least, welcome changes? Because, for instance, the big thing that you really had was the changing from 2D to 3D, which was definitely something very different for any video game in general. Do you like it? Do you think that Nintendo should have kept on rolling with this style of play with Paper Mario instead of going to, say, Sticker Star? Do you think that was probably what they should have done, you know, with the pixels and turn Super Paper Mario into a platformer rather than continuing on with the RPG?
I'm going to say no to that. I really didn't want this style to continue, really. I'm trying to think. Positives and negatives. I mean, let's get the negatives out of the way first. 3D actually, it was a great thing. It was so interesting. Like, I remember when I was younger, I was like, oh my god, this is so cool. Like, look, I'm turning around. Wow, this is like a whole entire new world. It looks completely different now. So that was really cool. So I think with the 3D thing, especially like with the kids and stuff, they definitely caught their attention. The kids were like, wow. Because I remember, I was like, whoa, this is so cool. And it is still cool. I'm not saying it's not cool. I'm just saying that it does get frustrating, especially later on in a game where it's like you have to keep going 3D and then you change the character and you do this and it's like it gets a little frustrating. But I ultimately do think 3D was absolutely an amazing, cool thing. Making the world completely different on the other side and then have some enemies be on the other side, having secrets and stuff, that was a cool thing. So I'll say that's a positive, okay? So you see, I said I was going to start with a negative, but I started with a positive, okay? So, yeah. For pixels, they were interesting, but I really feel like a lot of the pixels didn't really have a personality. And I'm going to say this, because with partners, I don't want to trash this game, so please don't take it that way. But with partners, like from previous Paper Mario games, like they would talk, like you talk to other characters, your partners would chime in and say like, oh, this, oh, that. Like you would have like, let's say Thousand Year Door, like, oh, Goombella would say something like this. Like, oh, like she'd be like sassy and stuff. Flurry would be like professional or whatever, not professional, but you know what I mean, like elegant. Koops would be like all shy and scared, like they would be like different types of responses with the partner you had out. But with the pixels, they're just there and they don't really say anything different. I mean, I guess maybe they make up for it because there's multiple characters. I don't know if that's a spoiler to say that, but like you get to play as, is that a spoiler to say that?
No, that's not a spoiler.
You get to play as like Peach and Bowser. So it's like they have different responses. Bowser's hilarious, but it's like, do you know what I mean? Like the pixels don't talk. So that's, I feel like if the pixels just would talk and talk more and have more personality, that it would be better. But oh, I think the pixels are cute. Does that mean anything? I mean, the overall like design of the characters is really interesting. Like Flipside, the characters that live inside is just very different. It's very shapey. Like, does that make sense? Like shapey. Yeah.
Each world with Super Paper Mario, or dimension rather, of each chapter have a different art style.
Yeah.
And they'd immediately establish that with it, because you know how once you go through a door for the first time, the entire world is white. And then it, like, appears in a different way.
That's cool.
Like, I remember, what was it, chapter 4, the one in space. They're all, you're in space, and originally you're just in a white screen, and then it's a whole bunch of, like, stamps, almost. And they come in star shapes, and there's a whole bunch of stamps until it turns into one big, wide, empty space. Galaxy, I don't know what else to call it. But as for me, I almost, because I feel like there's a bunch of pros and cons, because the one thing that Super Paper Mario couldn't do was have involved worlds, because it's 2D. In recent memory, Color Splash, there's a whole bunch of involved environments, and everything, well, looks, you know, three-dimensional. And unfortunately, with 2D style play, unless you're going to flip into 3D, which you rarely, it's still progressed in a line. It wasn't, it's not comparable to the worlds you would walk around in to pretty much any Paper Mario game. But, so that's, I guess, a downside to it. But I really like the idea of having multiple characters, and they don't bring that back, which I almost think they couldn't. I mean, I feel like, obviously, Peach would still work if we're going to, like, think directly. If we're going to turn... We could still probably use Princess Peach in the super, in, you know, 3D Mario game or Paper Mario games. But the other ones probably wouldn't work as well. And I think that was just a plus side. You know, that was, like, the trade-off they did. Like, oh, well, you're not going to have partners because there's no RPG aspect to the game, but we're going to have four different characters to play as, each of them having... you know, their own strengths and weaknesses. And they do actually do a lot with those characters, especially in the last chapter.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, it's not like, you know, it's not as bad, but I do, you know, miss having partners, and I really wish that they had brought it back, but, you know, Super Mario was the first game to cut that off. So, I think in the long run, I would have been okay with it, just like how, like, it seems like the first game with the new change in dynamic is awkward, but the second game, it turns out a lot better, kind of like with, you know, Paper Mario Sticker Star to Color Splash, because I'm more welcome to the new Color Splash formula compared to, you know, I would have been with Sticker, just the change to Sticker Star. So, you know, if they had another title in the Paper Mario series that was like Super Paper Mario, I'm sure I would have been warming up to it as much.
Right. But what are some, like, pros about the game? Like, some things that you like that this game did better? Maybe music, design, like what?
I mean, that's probably the art, I think, which is ironic, because this is the least papery game around. No one folds or bends. It's all very digital. But in a strange way, I really like it like that. I also, as I mentioned before, I really, really love that each place had its own different art style. And I thought that was really clever, and I kind of miss it, because, you know, they had different spots. Like, Color Splash kind of did it, where each world, world you go into had a different color, almost. You know, they're all named after colors, and, you know, they all had their single color base. So, like, you know, a world would be green, I can't think of anything that was green. Plum Park, I think it was
Plum
called.
Plum Park, yeah.
Color Splash. Oh, yeah, I love that. It was purple. That was their thing. So, I mean, they kind of do that, but this game knocks it out of the park with different art styles, which I think I really like. And I mentioned before, no other game in the series allows you to play as four different characters, which was definitely at least a good way to balance out the lack of actual partners and things, because the pixels were really just, like, tools.
Yeah.
They were tools with faces.
There you go. That's the right word to use. I was struggling earlier with that. Like, I like pixels, but it's like, they are just tools. Like, they don't have personalities. Like, when you first get them, they're like, hey, you know, like mm-hmm. what's his name? Faro? I think it's the first one you get. Faro? Yep. I think that's his name? That's how you pronounce it? Faro?
Yes.
Like, he was, like, saying all this stuff, like, oh, I've been locked here for 1,500 years, and then, you know, he's being, like, really macho and stuff like that. So it's like, okay, you have a little bit of a personality, but then that's it. Like, you don't talk at all. The whole entire rest of the game, you don't say one word. So mm-mm. It's like, you're right. They are pretty much just tools. That's a con. That's a con.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing that if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, one thing that we'll definitely have said over and over again, probably one of the best things about Super Paper Mario compared to Paper Mario as a series, is its story, which begins with this weird dude in a cape and a top hat named Count Bleck, who somehow got Princess Peach and Bowser to get married, and for whatever reason it creates this destructive thing called the Chaos Heart, and the Chaos Heart opens a dimensional rift known as the Void, which basically is to destroy not just one dimension, but all the dimensions. And as we later get on into the story in the game, you'll learn that Mario is awakened by this pixel named Tippy, and Tippy is like your Goombella or whatever, but she's more than that, because you later learn that she was like originally named Timpani, and some lady named Timpani, and Count Bleck used to be a person named Lumiere, and they were meant to be, and stuff like that. So we learned stuff like that, and you mostly learn it through cut scenes, if you will, but they're really just walls of text with music, and it's between after the you finish a chapter, you do it. But I also liked it because you don't get just have that, because you have what were called the Dark and Light Prognosticuses, and they were books. They were like fortune teller books. And with it, there were a whole bunch of, like, wizards and stuff, and you actually get to meet a lot of them, or, like, descendants of them, like Merlin, or in the first chapter, Bestovius. And then when you go from flip side to flop side, you see four, I forgot what their names are, but there were four, like, people who, I think, wrote the Light and Dark Prognosticuses. So, it was involved, but obviously, how do you feel about it? If I forgot anything, tell me. You know the drill.
I know the drill. This game, that is one thing that no one can ever take away from this game. However you feel about the gameplay, the story is so powerful, and it is the most powerful any Paper Mario game has ever had. Very powerful story, very involved story, very just, if there's twists and there's turns, and that's what makes it great. Like, I don't want to spoil everything, because I know some people might listen to this and be like, okay, you know, should I get the game, or like, what? But I'm trying my best not to spoil anything, but it's like, all I'll say is that just keep playing the game. If you get the game, keep playing it, because the story is so good, especially the ending. There's so many twists and turns, characters backstabbing other characters and things like that. That's a little bit of a spoiler, but I didn't say who, so, you know, you gotta just wait and see. But I just, yeah. I love so much stuff about this game, like, just the whole thing with Tippy and Count Bleck, and their true identities and stuff like that. It's just so cool. It's like, this story is the best story that Paper Mario game has had. And, you know, I want to bring this up because I know, like, this was a thing back then that really, like, weirded me out. So back then, like, remember Club Nintendo? You remember Club Nintendo, Soul?
Yes, I remember Club Nintendo and how bad I was to getting to it. Well, by the time I got into it, I had a year left. Yes.
Okay, so you remember. I remember there was, like, this, I don't know exactly what. There was, like, this, like, they had, like, these, I don't know what you call them. Like, quiz. I don't know. Not a quiz. Like, a questionnaire, kind of, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
You know what yeah. They had, like, a questionnaire, and, like, apparently, I don't know for sure. I don't know 100%, but, like, it was something like only 1% of people who were doing these questionnaires cared about the story. Everyone else was like, I don't care about the story. The story's not a big deal to me. That's not why I care about the game. And that just, it blows me away. Like, I realize that maybe Club Nintendo is mostly just, like, little kids. And, you know, maybe they have trouble reading, things like that. So they don't really care that much. I get that. But I was just still so flabbergasted that so many people don't care about the story. I'm like, that's the whole point of the game. That's what makes a Paper Mario game. And it's like, it makes me think, like, maybe that's why, like, with Sticker Star, they're like, okay, we don't really need that big of a story. We don't need, like, a huge story, because it went unappreciated in Super Paper Mario. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's just, yeah, that I just want to bring that little thing up. But this game has a great story. I'm sorry, I rambled on too much.
No, you're fine. It's definitely fine. It's a good story. I don't hate it. In fact, what's even better is we'll get into it in a second or so. But there's the overarching story, obviously, but each chapter has its own story too, which I think is really interesting, because they're actually, at least most of them, like, it all has this whole thing, like, theme of there being more than meets the eye. Like, you'll go into something, go into one of the dimensions, and especially, like, the first one, and it's pretty standard, but as you learn, there was, like, a whole bunch of people that came before you, and they were pretty much involved with the Light Prognosticus.
Prognosticus.
Yeah. I hate that word. It's really
hard. I hate that word.
But You know, they're all foretelling this giant void in the sky eating it up. And even as you progress the game, you'll see the void grow and grow as you defeat each, or, you know, go through each chapter. In fact, like, I remember, once you basically beat the game, obviously, you know, there's no after game with this, so it'll just send you to right before you beat the game. You know how it goes. Like, it gets huge. I remember it's, like, enormous and takes up most of the sky. It's quite creepy. It's unsettling, too. Like, it's, like, the size of Mario when it first starts off in the sky, and then it's pretty much the entirety of the sky. So, yeah. But, as I mentioned, there are 8 chapters, technically. Yeah, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, yeah, 8, yeah. 8 chapters and 8 doors, but the 8 doors don't go into 8 chapters. Yeah, it's annoying. But there are 8 chapters in the game, and Staryu and I are going to go just talk about them. I'll probably go through the stories. Sorry, I'm clicking. I'm trying to read. I'll go through the stories of them really quickly, and then, like, the what happens. Mostly talking about the little story that is incorporated into the chapter, and then we'll just discuss what we felt about it, you know, things that we had difficulties with, because, I mean, like it or not, this game is actually quite difficult towards the end. I mean, I definitely had trouble with it.
Oh, yeah, no, totally.
So, yeah. Okay. One thing that's also really cool is, I didn't mention this, unlike all the other games, this is separated into chapters, and then mini chapters, but there's an actual thing of progression. So, for instance, in chapter 1, we go from, like, you know, standard plains of Lineland, that's where you go, and then you go to the mountain, I believe.
Yeah.
Oh, Mount Lineland, and then you go to the deserts, and then you go to the ruins, and but that's all in one chapter, and I thought that was really, you know, interesting. But basically, chapter 1 obviously introduces you to the first pixel, a tossing dude named Thoreau, who basically, he can help grab things, and you use him, it's hard to explain, he's kind of like Koops, I think. Was that the one he was more like? Koops or Cooper, I forgot.
I mean, yeah, they can grab things, yeah, yeah.
He was pretty much that. And then you could use him to, like, I remember you have to use him to get out of the room you find him in, which is pretty much how you had to get what happened with pretty much every other pixel. But anyway, you'd go through, and you meet Old Man Watch It in Yold Town. Yeah, Watch It, who, you'd meet the Red and Green Bridge Brothers. Do you remember them?
I remember them. The green one.
Yeah, who was the one...
I'm sorry.
What's the one that got? What's the one that got caught in the three-dimensional world? Is it
the green red one? The red one.
The red one. Yeah, he got stuck in the three-dimensional, and you never get him out. I don't think. Which I was like, oh, that's kind of sad.
He's you do
like
get him out. There. You do get him out. You just You go near him, and then you just flip. You flip back into 2D, and then he's out. He's like, oh, thank you so much, and then he undoes the bridge. Not undoes. He does the bridge, so you can go through.
Yeah, he builds it. Yeah. Sorry, you're right. There's someone that you leave in the third dimension. I know it happens, but I don't remember where. But yeah, so you meet them, and that's, you meet these characters, you'd fight, one of Count Black's minions, the weird,
O-Chunks,
Neanderthalic, yeah, O-Chunks, you battle him, obviously, but the main thing was, and you'd meet the robotic guardian of the old ruins, Fractale, and originally he's supposed to, like, you know, let you pass and whatever, but Dementio, the creepy clown jester wizard, one of Count Black's minions, also, like, sends Fractale a virus because he's almost like a computer, and he attacks Mario, and you have to go battle him. And once you do, you get a pure heart, which, in the Light Prognosticus, according to that book, once you get all the pure hearts, it would help close the void. And you get it by a mysterious ghost woman named Merlumina. Merlumina, and she was like, yo, I've been here forever, and I've been waiting for someone to get this heart, and then you get the heart, and that's pretty much it. But my favorite part is you can actually go back through all these chapters, and there's a quest later on. And you go through most of chapter 1, and you have to go through each chapter, and talk to different people.
This is to get a pixel, by the way.
Trading quest. Yeah, this is to get a pixel. Which one was it? Piccolo?
A Piccolo, yeah.
Yeah, Piccolo. You get Piccolo. And you have to go through, I believe, all of Chapter 1. You have to go through each one, because I know you have to go to Bestovius.
Yes.
Watch it, and Merlumina.
And talk to her.
No, all of them.
Yeah, and then she goes on and on and on, and Mara falls asleep. She's like, hey, were you falling asleep? And then she goes on and on. And yeah, he's like, no, I'm not. And then she goes on and on again, and he falls asleep again.
Yeah.
And then she's like, are you falling asleep again? Are you kidding me? This is so disrespectful or whatever. And then you have to get, like, an autograph to give to watch it. It's just hilarious. I love the characters in this game. That is something that this game definitely does not disappoint with. You still have that great Paper Mario humor. By watch it, by moments like that, yeah. So chapter one, pretty simple chapter. There's not much to say. I'm really glad you brought up this side quest, though, with Piccolo, because if you didn't, there would pretty much, that'd be it. Like, we would be like, yeah, that's it. Because there's not much to say with chapter one. But yeah, the side quest.
I remember.
Go ahead.
I remember I was really stuck on Mount Lineland, I think. I was stuck on that one when I first played the game because I forgot that you could. I wasn't really used to turning into 3D because you get the ability to turn into 3D the previous part of Chapter 1. I don't know what else to call it, but part of Chapter 1.
The first part.
And I forgot that you could do it. Like, I don't know why, because you use it right beforehand. But if you remember those weird rolling thingies down the mountain, those giant, like, thwomp-looking dudes.
Oh, the thwomps with the spikes, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't remember that you could turn into 3D, so I'm like, what am I supposed to do? Like, so I just, like, kept running into them, and I was like, I don't know what to do. And I think my brother was like, you're supposed to turn into 3D, you idiot. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot more sense.
Whoops.
Wah-wah. Whoopsies. Yeah. It's a good chapter, though. It's definitely a good introductory chapter, because there's a lot of different environments you have to go to, because, you know, it kind of would have been boring staying into, you know, just the standard grassy fields and stuff. They do a lot with chapter one, which is good. Okay. Chapter two. This is my favorite. We're already getting my favorite. This and the next chapter are my two favorites just because of the characters and the environment. Gloam Valley is the prettiest. You go into it, and the first level is just going through the valley, and there's a bunch of water puzzles, and you get Princess Peach. I think you actually get her before this chapter, but, you know. You get the lovely Princess Peach, who can glide along the air. And she's really helpful, especially in Gloam Valley. It was kind of made as her introductory level, at least the first part.
Oh, yeah.
And as you go through, you're taken to Merlee's mansion. And Merlee is... She's just some lady, technically. I don't think there's anything actually... She doesn't tell fortunes, though. It's the other one who tells fortunes.
And Merlovely is the one who does fortunes. She does charms.
Yeah. Merlee. She does charms. You're right. Yeah, Merlee does charms. Basically, you have to go through the mansion, and you meet this character named Mimi. And Mimi... I think the player knows that she's evil at this point, but Mario doesn't, and we find out that she's one of Count Blake's minions, but before that, she poses as Merlee's maid, and you have to break it, by the way, there's no other way around it, you have to break this, I think it's a vase.
Yeah.
And she's mad, and she's like, yo, what are you doing? And then you have to go pay off the debt, because it was a lot of money.
1 million rubies.
And you can, I believe you can actually earn those if you want to, but the real way to get through it is you have to break into the safe using two new pixels, Boomer, the bomb one, and Slim, the one that allows you to pass through, like, turn super thin, and so...
Papery, yeah.
The one thing I can remember is there's a moving laser beam thing.
Yep.
That's guarding the safe, and you have to use Slim.
You have to stand perfectly still when it passes by you. Stand perfectly still, and then you go through it. Yep. Just make sure you have the code when you go to the little bank. You don't even need to ask anyone. You could just look online for the code. That's what I did.
Yeah, but you could find it in the game. There's a dude who I think you have to buy it from.
Yeah, that's a lot of work, because then you have to do those... you have to earn those rubies, and I don't want to go through it. So I just look online. Those are the codes. Bam, bam, bam. All done. It's really quick
but
chapter.
If you thought that's how you get the pure heart, no. Once you go earn it, Mimi gets like super mad, and she, I forgot exactly what happens in between this, but basically she gets really mad, and Merlee appears, and she's like, yo, Mimi's evil, and Mimi turns into, is actually turning into Merlee to trick Mario. And then my favorite part of the chapter, which I think I've admitted once before when I was really young, this scared me, was Mimi turning into the spider, and she chases you through the basement.
Oh, that happens in the beginning, when she's chasing you. Well, yeah.
Yeah. She chases you through the basement to find the, when you're trying to find the real Merlee, though, and that was the part that scared me, because I'm like, oh my god, what if she catches me?
And every time she appears in the room, she's like, me. I love that.
That was so scary. I was horrified. But yeah. And then you find Merlee, this is a weird chapter, then you find Merlee hiding in the bathroom, but she comes out of the toilet and specifically, and there's flies around her, which is the funniest part.
Gross.
And then I think that, and then you have to, I remember, you have to go try and differentiate the two Merlees, because Mimi turns into Merlee, and so there's two Merlees before you, and the way you figure it out is there's flies around the real Merlee, which is so funny to me. And there's a guess, what was it, Who's That Merlee, or Who's My Merlee? There's an entire game show.
Yeah, like the 66th one.
That was so funny. And then basically, once you defeat Mimi for the final time, after trying to figure, because you have to actually battle her now, after that, you get Merlee, and she gives you the pure heart. And there's not much to it other than that, but it's a really involved chapter. And I think it's definitely different because most of the other chapters involve progressing through, like, this big world, but not really Glum Valley. Glum Valley is just, the first level is going into the actual valley, and then I believe the other three are just Merlee's mansions, because you have going through the mansion, chapter 2, part 2, paying off the debt in part 3, and then going through the basement in part 4. So it's much different than pretty much all the others in that regard, and that's one of the reasons why I like it, because it feels a little bit similar to how Paper Mario usually is, where you have an entire world and you have to go through a certain part and then go back, and, you know, that's why I like it. It's familiar.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I like this whole entire chapter is really great, and it's really fun. I think that's the right word, fun.
Very fun.
And they gave Merlee a pretty big role in this game. Like, usually in previous Paper Mario games, like, she's just a charmer. And she's still a charmer in this game. I'm just saying, like, she's just a charmer. That's it. And obviously, she always rhymes. Every time she speaks, she's always rhyming. And that always makes it even more hilarious. Like, just the fact that she has to rhyme with everything. If she can't find a rhyme, like, I remember, like, this one point. I'm going to say this, then we move on. There's this one point, like, when she's fighting off with Mimi, and, like, she's finding something to rhyme with. So she's like, because obviously I am me, hot, and you are, I don't know exactly what, she was like, obviously I am me, hot, and you are not me, not. There's like a little quotation, like, hot, not. I love that, it's so good. Just those little moments. I love Merlee a lot. Alright, okay.
Mimi is a good character, I like her.
Yeah, Mimi's even funny.
Even though it's kind of creepy. It is. Like, you find, I remember, I didn't realize until way later, but, like, when she turns into her spider form, there's, like, this weird little, like, yellow thing on one of her legs. And I didn't realize what that was, but it was her hair. And I was like, that's so gross. Ew.
Yeah, that's...
And I didn't realize it was her hair. I was like, ugh. And then she's even creepier when you go into 3D. And I don't think...
She has, like, robotic gears, does. I think. Robotic gears,
yeah,
I think.
Something like that. But she, like... Is this the chapter where I feel like it would make sense, too. She attacks you with the rupees, too.
Yeah, she does that.
She'll, like, toss them out of her, like... head.
Yep. She spits them out, and you gotta throw them at her, and then just squish her, and so make her lose all her legs. When she loses all her legs, she's done.
They never really explain what's up with half these characters. That's the one thing they really don't do. Mimi and O-Chunks don't really have a background, but whatever. Alright. Is that all you have to say about Glum Valley and Merlee's mansion?
Yes. We do encounter Merlee later on, though, in her natural state of being a charmer. I think what's in... It's, in... Flop side, which is the opposite side of flip side.
Ooh. Yes, and then Lovely is in flip side, and Merlee's also involved in that side quest we mentioned before, by the way.
Yep.
Okay, chapter 3 is one of my personal favorites. It is an 8 8-bit style place called the Bitlands. And the Bitlands is, well, the main thing that really happens is, as soon as you enter, Tippy, your, you know, guide, gets kidnapped by a really creepy butterfly collecting obsessed dude who's a chameleon named Francis, and he talks like this, like an uber nerd.
Yeah.
And, you basically go through this, I mean, honestly, there's not much story to it, this is probably the least story-intensive place, but there's a lot of, like, callbacks to it. Like, I know, I think it's the first part of this. There's, like, a whole bunch of little parts that are inspired by Super Mario Brothers, the original part. And I remember, once you go through that, you meet Bowser in his castle. And it's kind of shocking, because they don't really explain why he's there. He's just kind of there, after, because he was in Bleck's castle.
He doesn't even know why he's there.
Yeah, no one knows. But, you know, he got married to Peach and created the Chaos Heart, and they just kind of appeared there. And do you battle him?
Yeah, you battle him. You battle him.
Yeah, you battle him. Down. All right, and then once you battle him, he joins you, and you go to the second part, which is the tile pool. I'm trying to remember these names off the top of my head. Yeah, it's the tile pool. I'm checking now. And the tile pool is actually one of the few water levels. I feel like the Wii, I've been talking a lot about, I said, oh, I hate water levels, except this one. It's happening a lot, but the tile pool I really like, mainly because of the music, and I like the boss battle with the giant squid. I don't remember its name, but I like that squid dude.
It's a giant blooper, that's all you need to know.
Yeah, he's a giant blooper, duh. What else? Oh, and then we meet the one pixel I really like, and that's Thudley. I like how he looks.
Thudley, you like how he's a weight?
I just think he looks stupid. I like his little mouth. It's a V.
He looks stupid, that's why I like him.
He does, he looks stupid. And then when you ground pound with him, because Thudley is the ground pounding pixel, he turns upside down, and I thought that was so funny. Okay, after that, you go to the Dotwood tree, which is really good. It's really hard. It's one of the first hard areas, because it's a completely vertical area, so that means if you fall, you fall for a while. And
those crazy daisies.
Yeah, and those weird, what are those called? The ones that are like, looks like Rubik's Cubes.
It's Tiloid. Tiloid.
Yeah, those are annoying. I hated those.
Yeah, I hate those.
And they're all over, well, they're all over this entire chapter, but yeah. So, you go through this tree, and then you're almost there to the castle that Francis is cooped up in.
Fort and Francis.
You're about to use the winds at the top of the Dotwood tree to get to the fort when you battle Dementio in Dimension D. He turns the world you're in into his own dimension, where he's supposedly much more powerful, but I don't think he actually is in the game. Like, he just says he is.
Yeah.
And you battle him, and basically, you run off to Fort Francis. And Fort Francis is the last one, and I think it's next to the tile pool. It's one of the best areas you go to, because Francis is surrounded by these little robot maids called, like, Meow Maids. And they're really funny, and if you go through this area a lot, you'll see a lot of callbacks to previous games. Like, he has Nintendo 64s, and he has posters of the original Mario partners, and
he has a lot of Thousand Year Door material in his room. Lots of Thousand Year Door, like, what are those called? Those little creatures of Boggley Woods? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
I don't know exactly what they're called. Punies. Like, so I think that's what they're called, yeah. Then he has, like, things with, Bo and Butler, whatever. And he has a lot of stuff in his room. Lots of different stuff. And he always mentions things, like, about X-Knots and stuff. I love that little callback to Thousand Year Door. This whole chapter is, like, great because of that.
My favorite part is, the dating sim you have to do.
Oh, no.
That was the funniest thing ever. This chapter is really funny because just has a lot of cool parts in it. But you have to, because Francis, you confront him because you want Tibby back, obviously, and you confront him, and he's like, oh my gosh, who is that? When he sees Peach, and he, like, falls in love with her or something, and you have to do a dating sim, and it's, like, the most uncomfortable thing ever. He's, like, super nervous, and he can't say anything right, and, at the end of it, you're supposed to not take him. Peach is not supposed to, you know, take him, and you battle him, and he's actually really hard because he turns invisible, and I really hated that, and turning 3D was mostly useless. This is not really the one you'd want to go 3D for. You just pretty much have to battle him.
Yeah.
And then you get Tippy back, and then there's just a pure heart.
Because she's castle. So happy. She's so happy that you got her that she just bursted out a pure heart.
It made no sense to me. I was really confused by that. And they don't explain that ever. It's just maybe, oh, she's Timpani, so she's connected to the pure hearts. I never got that. It didn't make any sense to me. And they don't explain why it's in the castle.
They said that they did actually explain it. In Fort Francis, it was owned by it was owned by a tribe of ancients, and the only way the pure heart of that place would come out is if someone like was really happy or like was really loving.
Oh, you're right, because Merlin tells you that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's
I forgot why. About that.
That's fine. I'm just saying that's why that happened, yeah. And also, by the way, if you want to really beat Francis, here's my recommendation. Pick Bowser. And then just ride with your new pixel you get in this chapter, I think. Carrie, yeah. Just literally ride her, because she's really, really good. She makes you go so fast. You can just zoom through places, and you can step on people who have spikes on their heads and stuff. So I'm not saying Francis is a spike. I'm just saying.
So Bowser does more damage.
And then you go quicker. So that's literally the most deadly combination. Bowser plus Carrie. It's so broken.
Yeah, because Bowser's his main struggle is that he's super slow, but Carrie increases your speed, so there's, you know, it kind of just balances itself out. Alright, after this is... Wait, do you have anything to say about this? I kind of just zoomed through.
No, I said pretty much everything I had to say. You know, I love the thousand-year door material in his room and stuff, and you know, otherwise it's a very simple chapter to get through for me, anyway.
Now, the next chapter, Outer Space, the one I was talking about, the stamps, is not as involved. You know, there's not much progression you go through until the last area. But I'm going to go through it really quickly because of that. The main ordeal is once you go through, well, first you go through the door and you wind up in space, and Mario's like, I can't breathe, so you leave. And you get a fishbowl, which somehow allows him to breathe. Don't ask me how. And you meet a space guy a space alien dude named Scorps, and he lets you through, he allows you to, like, soar through space and go through wormholes to travel further into space and stuff like that. And I think the first major part is when you go to, some planet, I don't remember the planet's name, and you go to it and you find, before that, I think this is before you go to, I don't know what they're called. Like, it was like a convenience store almost. And
yeah.
And Scorps has to go to the bathroom because of it.
No. But you have to go to a convenience store to get a chocolate bar to make him duplicate himself to fill those two holes.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. He's like a key to Scorps is a weird dude. But later, or sometime around then, he has to go to the bathroom. You go to his plant. I know. And then, but you're like, he can't go, so some dude in there. And
it's actually a pixel.
It turns out to be a pixel. Like, you have to go all the way around the planet to find some toilet paper, but it just turns out to be a pixel anyway, which is really funny. I liked Fleep. Fleep is really cool. Plus, Fleep is really interesting because of the treasure hunt in this game, and Fleep's, you know, how you find treasure. I love the treasure hunt in Super Paper Mario. I think it was really interesting how they did it because, you would find like little tears in the universe, and that's how you'd find treasure. And then Fleep, I think, also helped you even get to Flopside, because after this, you go to Flopside. Spoiler alert. Eventually, you go to the Woe Zone, which personally I think is one of the hardest areas in Super Paper Mario. The Woe Zone is very difficult.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of places to save or heal. There are really hard enemies in there. They kind of just throw you into it, too, because outer space, in general, is very easy until you get to the Woe Zone. And the boss there, Mr. L.
Oh, who's looks that?
Suspiciously like someone else. You confront Mr. L, who uses a very special robot known as the Brobot, which is a giant version of him, basically. It's a giant head of Mr. L.
It's his bro. And,
yeah, it's his, you know, the bro, whatever. You just don't...
I was like, right? Yeah, I'm just saying. That's what he calls it.
Yeah, he does call it. It's weird. You battle it, and you finally get to the end of the Woe Zone, where you find a pure heart. But not only do you find that, you find a statue of Squirps's mom. And then his mom turned out to be, what was she, like a space guardian or something?
Like, she's like a really statue, a golden statue.
No, but like, you read the statue, and it tells you about her. I just forgot what it was.
Yeah, she was a guardian of his kingdom, yeah. He's the prince of his kingdom. His name is Prince Squirp Coragoline Squirpina. That's his full name. Spoiler. So, and I really hate him, though.
Yeah, he's kind of annoying, but the lady Squirp, the queen Squirp, Squirpina. Squirpina, that was her name. She was the queen, right? And then she met the same tribe of the ancients who, you know, had the... Now I remember all this. Because there was... Okay, the pure heart that you find in Francis' kingdom was sent there by the tribe of the ancients. The same tribe of the ancients gave her the blue heart, or the pure heart. The blue pure heart. And then she hid it in the Woe Zone, because the Woe Zone is supposedly an endless maze, and the only person who could find it was Squirps. And Squirps was kind of like Superman, because her kingdom was like being destroyed or whatever, so Squirps is sent into a capsule. So
for 1,500 years.
Yeah. So he would be the guide for the heroes to find the pure heart.
But now she's dead, right? This. She's dead, right?
She's dead. Oh, she's long dead.
Oh yeah, that's what I thought.
His kingdom, the Squirp kingdom, fell in the outer space. Like, supposedly that's where it was, like, they were there. They were there in the Woe Zone or something. And...
But that's what, like, kind of made me, like, sad a little bit. Like, I was like, oh, does he know that his mom is dead? Like, does he know? No. Is he aware of that? Because, like, he just looks at the statue like, oh, look, it's mommy. Look, mommy, I got them. I'm like, oh, Squirps, please, no. That was sad. That was a little bit sad to me.
Do you have anything to say in the outer space? Do you think it was difficult? Do you agree with me with the Woe Zone, though?
Woe Zone, yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean... I think, I don't know which one it was. I think it was the convenience store one. I think that was 4-2. That one was annoying because you had to keep going through these portals to find the convenience store, and that was annoying as hell because you would get lost if you got confused, if you didn't know what portal goes to where. I got lost. I don't know. I got lost. Yeah. But yeah, I totally agree with the Woe Zone. The Woe Zone is really hard, and then you have to go upside down. Like, literally, like, you have to use these switches that makes you go all the way, like, on top of the ceiling, and then... It's really confusing, and it's really hard. And those stupid freaking triple pig things, I don't know what they're called, but you know what I'm talking about? Those pigs, you hit them, and then it turns into two pigs. You hit it again, it turns into one small... I hate those enemies.
Yeah. And there are Cursias here, too, I believe.
I hate those as well. Oh. So, yeah, it's I totally agree. It's a hard area. Woe Zone really is good music, though. It's Woe. I agree, though. Yeah, it has good music.
Okay. So, after that, as I mentioned, there's a... You've been so far going, like, your hub world is this world called Flipside. However, as you find out, there's actually a complete counterpart to Flipside known as Flopside. And you go through a bridge to put your pure hearts in these heart pillars, because heart pillars are what open the doors to different dimensions to get the next pure heart, etc., etc. There's actually not much, like, Flopside isn't a big deal. They don't even treat it as something, like, super weird. Like, it's just kind of there. None of the people realize there's a such thing as Flipside or Flopside in either world besides, Merlin and his counterpart, Nolrem, because all the people in Flopside, or in Flipside, have backwards counterparts to them in Flopside. The one cool thing is, they do have some really cool changes. For instance, in Flipside, there's, like, a bar where you can buy milk, and, there's the big white tower in Flipside where you go on the dimensional doors. Ugh. In Flopside, there's that bar only serves black coffee, complete black coffee, and then a giant black tower with only a single door that you can't get into. Yeah, that was like, I thought that was really cool. That was just a little interesting thing, but that's not really important because we get to, I love how I'm just talking, I'm going to say it again, but one of my other favorite chapters, only because of a few certain things, but they're really important to me about this game, and that is the cave area, this very prehistoric area known as the Land of the Wait, let me check. The Land of the Kragnons, I was correct.
Kragnons!
And they're all, like, cave people, pretty much, and the entire world has a very cave painting feel, and you battle enemies such as the Muths. They're giant mammoth creatures.
Are they called Muths?
Whatever. I think Muth, because it's, like, mammoth.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, my bad.
And they have a lot of they have a lot of health, too, so, yeah, that was annoying. To face them, and basically, you go into the Land of the Kragnons, and you find out that the Krag people, have been kidnapped by these flower dudes known as Florosapiens, and the water has been poisoned, or dirtied up, or whatever.
Spoilers! That's
well, no, you find that, you see that, you just don't know why it's, what importance it has. You just know that the water is very dirty. And you have to go, I think you originally are just going out to save them, and then you find out later on that the Pure Heart is, in the Florosapien's possession.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you go up to save them, and once you go through, you start, you know, trying to go find him, you find O-Chunks there, everyone's favorite, and you go battle him. And I think, personally, I know you'll battle him later on, but this is, the chapter where I think he's the hardest, because Dementio would later take control of him, using, well, this is later on, but he'll use the same sprouts.
The Floro Sprouts. Yeah.
He'll use the same sprouts that the Florosapiens are using to brainwash the Krag people, and he'll use it to battle him later on, to battle Mario, and it's too hard, but you still manage to beat him, and you use the Floro Sprout O-Chunks had. It's dead now, so it can't be used to brainwash people. You use it to break into the Florosapien's base. Also, with the help of the famous Krag, like...
Oh, I hate him.
I like him. Flint Craggly.
Yeah, Flint Craggly. I hate him.
He's like an adventurer, and... You meet up with him and his television crew, and he's also trying to figure out what's going on with the Florosapiens, but mainly, you know, for a television show. One of the cool things about it is you get to meet a very interesting... Well, you get the hammer pixel, Kudge, but you also get to visit the pixel Dottie, and Dottie allows you to shrink down to the tiny feet, like, the tiniest, tiniest, tiniest little pixel, And my favorite part about this is there's actually little tiny stores you can go to with the help of Dottie, littered both throughout Chapter 5, and I think there's one in the tree in Chapter 3, and there's one in Flipside and one in Flopside, and I feel like there are others, but Itty Bits, I remember that's what the store is called. I love those. I thought it was really cute, and they're super small even on screen, so you don't... It's like the size of your thumb, probably. I love it, but... Anyway, you go through, this is, once you get Dottie, you battle O-Chunks again, this is what I was talking about with the Floro Sprout, and you break through to the Florosapiens base, and you battle the leader, King Crocus. And I was talking about how each one has its own story and backstory a lot of the times. This one, too, has its own backstory, because you get to go see that King Crocus is not the first King Crocus. There were actually others that came before it. There was... King Crocus the First, Queen Crocus, and then King Crocus the Third, and then now the one you're facing.
Yeah, he's the fourth.
He's the fourth. It was basically like, there was one King Crocus, and then he was purple, or no, he's black. He was black.
The first
and
one,
then
yeah.
He died. he died, and then his daughter took over.
She was nicer. That's all I remember. She was very nice.
She was very popular, because she was all about studying diseases, and then she even wrote down the history of it, and she ruled for a very long time. And then once she died, her heir took over, King Crocus III, and unfortunately, he was very young when he was the king of the Floro people, and then he died because he was, like, super sick, which is ironic. So, he died at, like, really young for the flower dudes, and so there was no heir to take over, and, I forgot why King Crocus worked. He just, like, worked under him, so King Crocus took over, the current one.
Yes.
King Crocus
IV. I think that's how it was, yeah.
He's obsessed with beauty. That was his whole deal.
And he loves jewels. That's why they were mining for making the Kragnons mine for the stuff, because he wanted some more jewels. And he always is like, ooh, wee, ooh. Like, what is that? Like, how do you say that? Is that just literally like, ooh, wee, ooh? Like, I don't understand. But,
he also, you think he's actually a bad dude, but you actually find out he's not. Once you defeat him and he dies, well, he's still a bad person, obviously, because he's mind-controlling the crime people, but the reason why he was doing that was he was poisoning the water, which was killing the Floro people, and he was brainwashing them so they couldn't poison the water anymore. Also get the pure heart, which is in his possession, and that's pretty much it.
I mean, but I just wanted to say something though about this. Like, this is where, like, the story is just very powerful, because mm-hmm. when I first beat this King Crocus, I was like, yes, drown, you're a terrible person. And then the Floro Sapiens, like, they explained that it's like, yeah, what they did was bad, absolutely, they still did something terrible, but it wasn't just like one-sided. The Kragnons were poisoning their water supply, and that's why they retaliated. They didn't just say like, oh, I just want to mind control you guys and get my jewels. Oh, they were poisoning their water, so the Kragnons were not innocent in this at all. So I thought that was so interesting that it was not just so one-dimensional, like, oh, I just wanted jewels, oh. It was actually, like, very, like, you know, just very different and very... I just love how it's not so one-sided, you know what I mean? Like, not just one-dimensional, mm-hmm. like, oh, they were terrible. Like,
good
I love
versus
that.
Evil.
Yeah, it's not like that. It's so much more complex. I love that. This chapter was great with the pure heart. Absolutely great.
I like it. However, I feel like a lot of it was very forgettable. The first part was very forgettable. I think once you get into the Floro Sapien Caves, which has one of my favorite songs ever, I listened to it when I was doing college work. I'd listen to that song, like, on repeat.
Oh.
But, because all I remember, like, I don't really remember much about it. I remember there's the, Yoshi Rock that you have to run around. I think there was something about, like, getting fire and water tablets and doing stuff with that.
Yeah.
And that was it. That's all I remember from this first part. And then the second part, I remember the minecart rides and
that was good.
The battle with O-Chunks, the music, and then King Crocus, like the legacies of the King Crocuses, which were really cool. I do like that. Like, I really like how they had not just one character, but they had an entire background of it.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. That's what I was talking about at the beginning of this, how a lot of this has like an entire idea of history. But not just the history with the light prognosticus. You meet a whole history of each dimension, and it at least somewhat fleshes out the chapter people and the backgrounds and everything that really actually occurred before Mario came into the dimension to get a pure heart, and how the pure heart affected said dimension, such as in chapter 4, like why Squirps is there in the first place. But yeah. Alright, now on to a really interesting... This is where I think the game takes a turn, because originally you're just going through these chapters and getting pure hearts, and while that still certainly is the case, you get to go into the Samur Kingdom. And the Samur Kingdom, it's still the same, you know, it's still the same thing, you're trying to get a pure heart. In this one, it's almost like the Pit of 100 Trials, in which there's 100 samurai, and you have to battle these samurai, according to King Samur. You have to go battle these, well, they're called Samur guys.
Oh.
And you battle these Samur guys, and once you defeat all 100 of them, the Samur King will give you the next pure heart, because that's what you're supposed to do. However, once you get, I think, 25 in, Count Black tells them that the Samur Kingdom is going to be destroyed, because apparently the Samur Kingdom is one of the closest dimensions to the Void, and, honestly, nothing, they don't really care. Like, then, I mean, soon they start to realize, like, oh my gosh, like, the world starts shaking, literally, as it's getting destroyed, and they realize they're just letting you pass, like, you're not even having to battle them, but once you get into the, some number, you're not too far after you meet the king, and he's like, yo, fine, I'll give you the pure heart, because you kind of need it, and so once you take the pure heart, it turns out it's actually a bomb, and the king was Mimi, and you have to go battle Mimi again, and she's doing the Mimi, turning into a spider.
Actually, she doesn't this turn battle's into a little spider. Harder. I don't think she turns into a spider in this one.
No, I'm sorry. She turns into her... I was thinking about the rubies.
Yeah, she just uses her rubies. She spins around and stuff. Yeah, she is annoying in this one. But she's actually really easy to beat if you use Peach. Peach, actually, she can protect against the rubies. Yeah, and you grab. Perfect. She gets a job done.
However, she tells you that she was only there to stall you. I remember this, because I was like, are you kidding me? Wait, what? This is something, because you don't expect it. Like, you expect that you just win. That's what you do. You win, you get the pure heart, and you don't have to have this world get eaten up. But the world gets eaten up. You have to go leave to Flipside again, because the world gets destroyed, and then you're just like, oh, then what do we, like, Tippy's like, oh, what do we do now? And so you go back into the Samur Kingdom, and you're just, there's an entire white, endless world, with only a few, like, you'll see here or there, you'll see, like, a little top of a pagoda, because, you know, this is, like, a Japanese-themed area, or, like, some rocks that was once part of the Samur Kingdom, but... That's it.
That's and very interesting. It's very interesting. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
No,
but,
it's fine.
But it's very interesting. Like to me, this level, it was very interesting that when you went back, this happened, because to me, it was like a preview. This is the preview of what's gonna happen if Count Black gets away from doing what he's doing. So I love that it was a preview of like what's to come. Like
an example.
This is the reality.
What you have to fear. Yeah.
Exactly. I love that so much. And it's just so ominous. Nothing's around. Just those fallen parts, like you mentioned, because it's a Japanese area, and there's like rocks and stuff. And, like, that's it. And then you see Mr. L, and you can go on.
Well, no, before that, you find the pure heart. You actually do find the pure heart. However, because the world got destroyed, the pure heart has been turned to stone. And you don't know what to do, but before you try to leave, Mr. L appears, with an upgraded robot, which was... This is a hard battle. I hate this battle.
Really?
It goes on for a while. I hate it, because it goes on for a while. I shouldn't say it's hard. It just goes on for too long.
It's very easy to me. He only has, like, 64 health, I believe. It's really easy. Just use Bowser.
Okay, why didn't you use Bowser?
Oh, well, you gotta use Bowser. That's how you get things done. Bowser was there for boss battles, because they're like, okay... These other characters are too weak. We need Bowser. That's what I do. I use Bowser. It's like 10 times quicker.
Okay.
Just saying.
Whatever. Alright. So, after this happens and you leave with the stone pure heart, Dementio appears and he puts Mr. L in a box. And he destroys Mr. L. Like, legit, that's what happens. He just destroys Mr. L because he let Dementio down too many times. So once you go into, Flipside or whatever, no, I'm sorry, I'm getting this wrong. I'm trying to remember. You lose the battle, and then you get killed or something. It's kind of confusing.
What do you mean? Wait, what are you saying?
Okay. I'm trying to explain how Mario winds up in the underwear.
Oh, Dementio. He goes to Merlin's house where you guys are all at. He puts you in like this rainbow little thing and it just blows up. Psh, 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 psh.
Yeah.
And then that's how
and he does the same thing to Mr. L.
Yes. Oh yeah, he does. Yeah, he does the same thing. Like after you beat him, he does the same thing to Mr. L. Like immediately after you guys leave. And destroys him and he destroys all of you. Yeah.
You go there. And you wind up in the underwear, and the underwear is where video game characters have their game overs. It's pretty much like an afterlife. And however, you find out that you're not actually dead. You're just kind of there.
Yeah.
But it's just Mario. You do not have Peach or Bowser with you. So you just have to go through the underwear, and you wind up meeting this very odd looking person, especially for the dreary underwear, named Lovebee. And Lovebee is trying to meet the queen of the underworld, underwear, whatever you want to call it, named Queen Jadis.
Oh.
And Queen Jadis is like, yo, why is my daughter down here? And she's like, so you have to go get her daughter, you have to go find her. And she says, if you get my daughter, I'll fix your pure heart. And once you find Lovebee, you find someone else. You find Luigi somehow in the underwear, alive, and he has
deep
no idea
inside
why he's
a
there.
River. Yeah, like deep
yeah,
inside the river.
He's under a river.
River twigs.
With a whole bunch of hands.
And that music is creepy, by the way. The river twigs music is creepy. Mm. As you go down more and more, like there's like these mumbling, and like I think someone like reversed it, like on YouTube, and then you could literally hear someone say, "Save us, please." Oh, it's creepy. Oh, don't listen to that at night. Do you know what I'm talking about? The music.
No.
You never. Okay. Well, then maybe you should listen to it, but don't listen to it at night because it's really creepy. The music is backwards. Yeah.
That's creepy. So the underwear is actually almost like a two-part chapter because, once you get the pure heart restored, you stick it back into Flipside. You leave. You stick it in Flipside, and the door just takes you back into the underwear, and you're like, wait, what? So you go back and you talk to Queen Jadis, because she's the only person you really know down there, and she tells you, I forgot why, but I remember you were like, well, fine, can you go take Lovebee to the over there where she's supposed to be? And the over there is like the heaven of Paper Mario.
Yeah, and she says that you go there, you talk to Granby about the pure heart. And he's in the over there. That's why she
Oh, yeah, to find the next pure heart, yep. Because that's what the door takes you.
Yes.
And so you go there and you have to go all the way up the underwear road. And the underwear road is hiding a very scary beast. And it turns out it's Bowser.
It's
and he's
Bowser.
Just there. And he's like, hey, what are you guys doing here? And you find you, Bowser. You find you, Bowser. You find your friend, in quotation marks, Bowser. And you go. You have to go all the way up the underwear road to battle the Underchomp in a very Earthbound-like battle. You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly.
The game,
yeah.
Earthbound. Yeah. And it's really good music, too.
It's a very easy battle if you have Piccolo. If you have Piccolo, you can put them to sleep.
Yeah, because he knocks them out. In fact, I think after Chapter 6 is when you can get Piccolo, after the Krag people.
It's somewhere around, when you get to Flopside, so around that area, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you do have Piccolo, or if you want to get Piccolo, that's probably when you want to get it, before Chapter 7.
Yeah.
So you ascend up the underwear road, but it turns out there's more you have to go up, and it's the over there stair with some of the most annoying music. It is very annoying because this is a very, very hard area. It's very long, it's very difficult.
Everything looks the same too.
Yes, you can get lost super easily. Like they literally number it because of how similar everything looks. They literally like number the floors you go up. Not all of them, but like every 5 or so, they have a number on a cloud, and you have to go up obviously 100 because why not? And once you're like halfway through, you find Princess Peach in front of a tree, and Lovebee is like, oh my god, she ate the forbidden golden apple, and that is where you basically it's like the sleeping it's like a sleeping thing, and she's like
so satisfying that you just go to sleep. that's what it said. That's what it said. The satisfying apple. Oh my god. Yeah, and then you have to give her the taboo fruit, which is a black apple, which will wake her up because it tastes terrible.
But you can give her other apples too.
One gives her a mustache, I think.
I think it's the red apple.
And then one that like makes her grow big, I think. I don't know. There's
one
like,
that shrinks her.
One that shrinks her. It's just if you want to do that, you go ahead and do that. There's many different apples. Just understand, it's not the black one. Because once you give her the black one, she's gonna wake up.
Well, yeah. There's the one with the. Oh, and then there's one, the pink one, that turns her into a real peach.
Oh, I love that one.
That was funny. I was like, oh,
turns her into a peachy peach. The fruit. Yeah, it's an action item. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, you get, eventually you find the black fruit. That's the one you're supposed to give her, and she wakes up, and she's like, oh my god, I'm alive. Because it's super bitter. It's so bitter and disgusting, it wakes you up. That's why it's the taboo fruit. And, once you finally ascend, now with Peach, because you need her to get through, by the way, so it's not like you can just leave her there. You need her with her floating ability to get all the way up the over there stairs, and you wind up in the over there city, or whatever you want to call it. And once you're there, you find out it's being raided by these evil skeleton dudes, and you have to go through and save Lovebee's father. You have to battle the leader of the skeleton dudes named Boneshell, whose whole thing is about freezing. And he's actually pretty difficult if you're not prepared. I don't think he's the hardest boss, honestly, but he's definitely a difficult boss. He's a weird boss, too.
He's boss, the easiest boss.
Yeah. No, if you're not prepared, he can be difficult. But
all you have to do is use Luigi and then use the spring thing.
I was going to say, if you're not prepared, because if you're me and didn't realize that your first time playing, let me finish, are you?
I don't know. Maybe because I played this game so much. It's just, I know how to just destroy these bosses.
No, I finished him. No, I played him. I just did this yesterday. I did this part. He's easy if you have Luigi and you're ready, but, like, I had no idea to use Luigi. I didn't get it when I first played the game.
Oh, okay.
But Luigi is, the counter character. I don't know what else to say. That's what you do. You use Luigi, you avoid all his attacks, you jump onto his head because he's super tall, and bang, he's dead. You save Lovebee's father, Granby, and this is really sad. This is the sad part. I was like, because you don't expect this. You meet Lovebee's dad, Granby, and Granby's like, oh, you need the pure heart, don't you? And then it's revealed that Lovebee is actually the pure heart, the last pure heart. And she basically, like, sacrifices herself, and, like, she says goodbye to her parents, because her parents get really mad. They're like, I don't want to turn my daughter into a pure heart. And they decide, fine, we'll do it. And she transforms back into her original form, and you get taken back to Flipside. And if that's not sad enough, well, once you get Lovebee, it's kind of like the final battle, because, like, the end of the world is coming.
But can I say one thing about Lovebee, though? That was really, really, really sad. That whole conversation with her parents. I don't even know if you remember it, but, like, she was arguing with Granby. Her father saying, why did you do... Obviously, with the modern English, with the thou if, why doeth thou to me? Like, I can't with that. I'm not going to speak like that. But it's like... She was saying all this stuff like, why did you not let me live my life? Why were you so strict on me? Why you knew this? I was gonna be a pure heart. This is what I am. Why were you so strict on me? And he's arguing back like, this is because we did this because we love you. We were always there when you were sick and all this stuff. And it was like, and then he was accusing her of lying. Like, you skipped school. You did this. You did that. And then she was like sad. Like, why would you accuse me of lying? And it was so sad. The whole thing. Oh my gosh, when you get to this part, guys, if you play the game, you get to this part, it's so sad. Like, the first time, okay, this is so pathetic, and you're gonna laugh at this, maybe or maybe not, I don't know, but I actually cried the first time I saw this scene, because it was so sad. I'm like, oh my god, this is like, I don't know, like, it's like I was putting myself in Lovebee's position, and I'm like, oh my god, like, this is the end, I'm just a heart thing, like, this is sad stuff.
They don't do loss, you don't really do loss in Nintendo games, so it's definitely not something you expect.
Yeah, I it's something you do not expect at all. So, wow, oh my gosh. I just remember that scene.
That's why I said there's, like, when you get into this game, like, after chapter 7 with the Chapter 6 with the Samur Kingdom, like, there's a different there's a change to the game. It's just it's different. Something about it is different because it you still are getting pure hearts, obviously, but you know, it's changed. The game has changed.
It got darker.
It did. So yeah, if you thought that wasn't sad enough, basically the world's about to end, yeah. And you have to go enter the void in Flopside Tower on that final door. You have to go through the final door, and you have to go into Count Bleck's castle, which is completely black. It's very, very large and very difficult. It is super hard. You have to bring all your healing items, because that is... There's not many places to get health from.
No.
This is a long chapter. I don't really know how to, like, describe it, because there's a lot of story, like, little bits of story, but I'm going to go through it as quickly as I can. Basically, you're going to have to keep losing members of your party as you go through Count Bleck's castle to Count Bleck's minions. For instance, right as you go through the castle, the end of the first part, you find O-Chunks. You battle O-Chunks, and Bowser battles him, and once you defeat him, the roof on the room collapses, and which leads O-Chunks to catch it, but he can't hold it by himself, so Bowser stays behind to hold it up, because obviously he's the strongest. So Mario, Luigi, and Peach continue on, and you hear some crash behind the door once you leave, and once you try to enter, the door doesn't open.
Yeah.
And you just have to keep on moving on.
Bowser's gone! Then, oh my gosh. Okay, go on.
And then you find Mimi, who is disguised as...
She disguised herself as Merlin, and then she disguised herself as Merly.
Oh, yeah, she's trying to get, like, information.
Yeah.
And, Peach gets really mad at her, because she's like, that's Mimi, and then her and Mimi fight again. And, I think they... Something about it is, the floor... They get into a fight, you fight her, and then the floor collapses, and Mimi falls in, but Peach,
hanging on a ledge.
She tries to talk to her, and she catches her, and then they're hanging on a... It's a literal cliffhanger, and, they kind of just hang on. They keep on hanging on, but... now it's just Mario, Luigi, and you go through the castle again. Well, there's a lot to that, but you meet Dementio, and Dementio told them that he was, what was it? I think he basically admits he was, like, double-crossing Count Bleck without saying he was double-crossing them.
Oh, wait, no. He says that after you have to chase him through every single freaking world you just went through. So you have to go Lineland, Gloam Valley, Merly's Mansion, the Bitlands. I swear, it's so annoying. You have to chase him through every place. Oh!
I left that part out.
Yeah, and then you use Luigi, you destroy him, and then that's when he's like, oh, this is all my plan, I wanted someone to beat Count Bleck or whatever, or something like that.
And then is this when he reveals that Luigi was Mr. L?
No, he doesn't reveal that yet, but he does keep Luigi with him, and Mario's left to go on by himself.
Well, there you go. Oh, yeah, because
the final fight
is you have to go battle Count Bleck. Count Bleck is obviously very difficult, but you find out that Bowser, Peach, and Luigi all survived. Bowser fell through the floor, and then Peach landed on Bowser. Because basically what happened is, you know how the floor collapsed in Peach's room?
Yeah.
That floor was what was crushing Bowser, I guess. It sounds like that. It was funny. And so they survive. Luigi is found unconscious and can't remember anything again. Suspicious. And yep. You have to go battle Count Bleck. And Count Bleck is not that hard, honestly, for a final boss. And then he basically admits that he's like, kill me. He's like, I have nothing else to live for once you defeat him. And then it's very much alluded that Tippy and Bleck are these mysterious characters you've been hearing about. Timpani and Lumiere. And as soon as they, like, are about to come to that realization, Dementio appears and tries to defeat Count Black. But Nastasia, his assistant, Count Black's assistant, protects him. And Dementio gets super mad, and he takes the Chaos Heart, the evil heart that you found at the beginning of the game, and he creates Super Dementio using a Florosprout implanted in Luigi's head to create Super Dementio. It's a complicated thing. He creates a robot using the Brobot and Mr. L's own nefarious contraption, and you have to face Super Dementio, who is definitely harder. He's a really hard boss, because he has a lot, he does a lot of damage. I think that's his main thing. He just does a lot of damage. I don't remember the health on him, though. 200, which is, you know, not that,
not that much, was that what you were going to say?
No. It's not that much in the long run, because, as you said, Bowser and stuff, but the main part that's really hard about it is, the platforms are moving, and I hate that.
Yeah. Let me just say this quickly about this whole World 8, Chapter 8, was annoying. Yeah, Castle Black. It was annoying as hell, because it's so hard to navigate it, because everything is black, and it's like you don't really see the differences between certain areas, because it's so easy to get lost in those, just so confusing.
They do not help you with that either. They don't give you any, little, like, landmarks.
No, they don't. And it's harder than Chapter 7 when it comes to that, because Chapter 7...
Oh, for sure.
For sure, like, this is, like, so much more confusing, especially 8-3, but, oh my god. Anyway, yeah, this whole entire, yeah, after you beat, what's the boss's name? I think it's just
Super
Mr.
Dementio.
L. Oh, Super Dementio, yeah. After you destroy Super Dementio using Bowser and Carrie, that's what I literally did. I used Bowser, Carrie, and then I have, like, there's this item called the Mighty Tonic, I think, and it boosts your attack, doubles your attack. And I destroy him easily because I literally 70 damaged him in like one fire breath. It's a lot. That's what I do. And then, yeah, after that, what happens after Soul? The ending.
You destroy him. As he's defeated, he tries to fuel the void with the Chaos Heart. But Count Black, long story short, he goes back to the place where he tried to get Peach and Bowser to get married, and instead of them getting married, Black and Tippy, or Lumiere and Timpani, renew their vows of love and commitments and marriage and other stuff, and they basically create the Pure Hearts to destroy the Chaos Heart, making the void go away and restore all the damage done to, like, the Samur Kingdom, and that's pretty much it. All of Count Black's minions, because now Tippy or Timpani and Lumiere disappear, so it just leaves Black's minions with Mario and the company. And they're pretty much, like, welcome. They're just like, yo, what up?
Yeah, it's like, yeah. It. Oh, you
and
need, like...
It ends with, like, a photograph of, like, two figures that are implied to be Count Black and Tippy.
And then that's the end of the game. And you can actually continue playing if you want it to get, like, secret stuff and stuff, but otherwise there's...
I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah. You don't want to talk about that?
No. Okay. So how do you feel about the ending of the story in general?
I feel like everything was answered. All my questions that I had was explained towards the end. The only thing that kind of confused me, though, is that I feel like this was never touched upon. Tippy, I guess, maybe has a crush on Mario. And I feel like that was never really, like, fully... Like, do you know what I mean? Like, especially Lovebee specifically says it. Like, oh, do you have a crush on one of the mustache twins or whatever? And... Tippy's like, what? No, I don't. Oh my god, I don't have a crush on Mario. And it's like, that. I feel like that was never expanded on. That was the one thing I feel like was never expanded on. But she's with Lumiere now. So everything, this whole entire story was great. I feel like everything was answered. It was awesome. The whole entire story just goes together, and all the loose ends, almost all of them, were tied, and it was great. I love this story of this game. And we pretty much spoiled everything, so...
this is definitely... It's too... The game's too old to be spoiled.
True, yeah, that's true. This game came out in 2007. Can you believe that, guys? Mm-hmm. Almost 10 years! Jeez!
I hate this. I already hate that the Wii is 10 years old. Like, that's disgusting.
I really hate that, too. I despise it. It makes me feel old. I hate that.
It makes me feel old, and I'm not even an adult yet. Like, that's not right.
Aren't you going to be 18 this year?
Yeah, well, I mean, I just turned 17, so it's going to be a while, but yeah.
You're going to turn... Oh, you know, you're going to turn 18 next year, right?
Technically, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Nice stories. Oh, I can't believe it. Oh, but that's anyway. Super Paper Mario. That's Super Paper Mario, yeah.
Well, we have one last thing to do. A token lost levels bit. We have to rate this.
Oh, boy. Okay, I'll start because I don't want... Okay, yeah. I absolutely recommend it. It's on the Wii U eShop. I believe it's $19.99, I think.
It should be $20.
Yeah, that's how almost all the other Wii games are. So I believe exactly. It should be that. Yeah, it's on the Wii U eShop, and I do recommend it. You know, if you're a Paper Mario fan, or if you're not a Paper Mario fan, you just want great games on the Wii, you know, get this game. You know, I've always said this about... pretty much this game, Sticker Star, it's not the best Paper Mario game. I hate saying that, but I feel like that's the best way I can describe it. It's not the best Paper Mario game, but it's a good game.
It's a good game.
By itself. If we just call it just a Wii game, it's a good Wii game. A good Paper Mario game, I mean, I don't know. You can decide for yourself. I'm not going to tell you that. You can decide for yourself. I give this game a 7 out of 10. So I give this a 7.2943. 7.2943. That's my rating of the game out of 10.
I give this game. You know, yeah, that's pretty much what I was gonna give it, a 7. I like it and all, but I can't get over the fact that it does get repetitive in terms of gameplay, which is almost hypocritical for me to say because it isn't. It does change a lot. A lot of the worlds are really different, but it's sort of at the end of the day. You don't really remember what you did at the beginning at the end of the game because it goes through so many different chapters and changes and stuff like that.
Right.
You don't really get that. You do get kind of a recap because they did that with Dementio when you go chase him. You go through chapter 1, 2, 3, and 4 really quickly. It's not like you have to go through every single level all over again, but, you know, they kind of give you that because I do actually really like recaps at the end of the game because... it allows you to remember your accomplishments, but
right.
They don't really do that. And I know that's like such a small thing, but I mean, if we're judging a game overall, if I don't really remember the accomplishments I did at the beginning compared to the end, it's not as good a game as it being compact, which is fine, whatever. It's still a good game and I definitely recommend it, but you know, a 7's okay.
It's on the Wii U eShop, so go get it. Christmas already happened, so you should have some cash to get it.
So, I'm not going to really talk about news and community because it's already long enough, but I will mention the Nintendo Switch Direct is very, very soon. It's, I think, January 12th.
Oh, boy.
So if you're looking forward to watching it, check it out then because there's supposedly a lot of details, pretty much everything we're getting, including its... release date, which is in March. I believe it's in March. I'm like 90% sure it's gonna be this March, unless they changed it, which they could have. But the Nintendo Switch will be having its full rundown that day, so I'm sure we'll probably talk about it somehow. Look forward to it then. Anyway, do you want to do what have you been doing? Or because I don't, even though I haven't been around in a while, I don't have anything to say.
No, we don't have to do it. Yeah, we don't have to do it.
Cool.
I'll just say this. Okay. Merry Christmas, happy holidays. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Happy Hanukkah, too, because I know Hanukkah's still going on.
Oh. Happy Hanukkah, then.
Well, depending on when this is uploaded, it'll be over, so, maybe. That's the end of the podcast. Don't forget, we are on iTunes. We love it if you go on iTunes and give us a review, a rating, a hug, a kiss on the cheek.
Oh.
It makes us feel good inside and it also helps us grow. Of course, you can check out the podcast website at thelostlevels.mariopartylegacy.com and the standard website where we host all of our games and goodies at mariopartylegacy.com. We're all over social media. I think the best place to follow us personally is the Twitter at Lost Levels MPL. We also have a YouTube, of course, Lost Levels MPL. And as for me, Nintendo Network, CONPETE.
Oh, okay. Well, for me, I am SpiderStarYou on YouTube, Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, Nintendo Network, Google+, and Instagram. All of it is SpiderStarYou, so go follow me on all those places. And also, because Christmas just passed, I said Merry Christmas, but I didn't say this, so I need to say this. Merry Christmas, and ho, 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 my hoes. Ooh,
oh,
yeah. Yeah. I had to do
it.
Had to. Ho, ho, my hoes.
Man, I miss Toadette now. Why you gotta do that? Anyway, okay, oh. Sorry.
That is the end of the podcast. I hope you had a great time listening to us ramble on, especially me, about Super Paper Mario.
Especially Soul.
Let us know how you feel about the game in the comments below, or in the reviews even. And we'll see you all on the flip side.
On the flop side. Oh!
Bye!